Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast, half full editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Wondrich. How are you, Dave?
I'm hanging in there.
I'm glad to hear it.
Just barely.
Excellent. Well, I think this topic will buoy your spirits. Obviously, New York is home to now hundreds of bars, it seems.
Thousands of bars.
At least the you and I visit, let alone all the other ones.
Well, I'm probably good for hundreds.
Right. But,
thousands would be a stretch. I would if I could.
But it is funny because some of our favorite bars in New York have been around for hundreds of years, right? I mean, they go back, you know.
Yeah, at least a century and a half and more.
Right. I mean, it's.
Know, and,
I mean, for a city where it's amazing if you make one anniversary or two anniversaries, I mean, so many places are, you know, go out, you know, once they're.
Yeah,
you know,
New York is not kind to its history.
No, or, you know, once your first lease runs out, you're never going to get that second lease. And, you know, it's, you know, hopefully it's a 30-year lease, but it's more likely these days to be much less than that.
Yeah, and we lose a lot of old bars as a result. But there are a few survivors, thank God. Mostly people who were either financially lucky or very, very smart and at some point bought the building.
Yeah.
That is the rule number one in New York real estate.
And you
buy the building.
And you get these, like, you know, holdouts in between, usually, you know, surrounded by skyscrapers and, you know, or all types of developments. And there's this one holdout there.
Yeah. I mean, there's one holdout down in Tribeca. Tribeca is the fanciest neighborhood in Manhattan, probably.
Triangle below Canal Street, right?
It's a very rich neighborhood.
Totally invented by real estate people.
Yeah, and full of, you know, Robert De Niro and people like that.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, among all this very quiet, very extreme wealth is the Nancy Whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the diviest goddamn bar. One of the diviest bars in Manhattan. And really a rough-edged drinking person's drinking bar.
You know? For sure.
And no frills, no fancy. If you go in there, you're going to end up talking to some person who might have had four too many drinks by 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Sure.
And is on about some goddamn thing.
Right, exactly.
And they will talk to you, and you better be ready for that.
And that person just might be you on a certain day.
It might be me, that's
right.
For sure.
You could be one of those two people depending on the day.
Yeah, yeah.
There is certainly a few different old bars, either in Tribeca or near, it's also some of the oldest parts of the city. You know, the New York starts obviously right at the harbor, right? And then, I mean, obviously the
it
first.
Creeps up.
Yeah, exactly. The first settlements are literally right there. And then, you know, you creep up, and then the rich people keep basically moving north and further north and further north as the
kind
city
of like,
stretches out.
You know, like a snake shedding its skin.
Exactly. And there, you know, the. What used to be rich parts of the city turn into, like, you know, slums, and you have this constant reinvention. At the same time, Manhattan, since it was a colony, people are always extending the tip further and further out with landfill, whether it's ships, which is why we always have, like, First Street, Water Street, you know, like all these.
Yeah, it's like that's
wait,
not First anymore.
Wait, right, exactly. Yeah. Why does this come after this one? Aren't we already at the
New Street?
Exactly.
It's like, how did this street get to be new?
And that continues, I mean, for decades. I mean, we see, like, you know, when the original World Trade Center is built, all the buildings that are flat, and they take that, right? And then they build Battery Park City. That's the rubble, I think, is dumped into the Hudson.
Yeah, and for a while there, it was like a beach there,
right, you know, exactly,
an artificial beach made out of old houses and stuff.
You and I have lived in this crazy city for a long time. And there's always been an amazing churn in New York.
Oh yeah,
literally since you know, Peter Stuyvesant's cave.
Oh, since the beginning. I mean, the earliest bars in New York, you know, we've got notes about, like, this tavern here and that tavern there. There were a few downtown. There was a Shakespeare Tavern. There were a bunch of others.
Yeah.
And they're all long gone, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them made it into the 19th century.
Right.
Some of the really old ones from the pre-British days, from the British days, rather. The Dutch ones, I think, made it maybe into the 18th century.
Yeah.
Usually bars, even the oldest bars, only last about 100 years here.
Right.
If you can beat 100 years, you're really doing something. The real estate in New York is just like a lawnmower, you know. It just goes over the old neighborhoods and just trims down everything.
Over
and over again.
Or you're able to go like subterranean, what's that one?
Oh, Pfaff's.
Pfaff's.
Yeah, in the cellar.
Right, which is, you know,
which
maybe...
Which lasted maybe 40 years. You know, that was a good long time.
That's a good one,
It was a bohemian bar on Fifth Avenue.
Walt Whitman, I think.
Walt Whitman, Edgar Allan Poe, and Jerry Thomas, the famous bartender. Right. All hung out there.
It's still like in some, you know, it keeps sort of reinventing itself. Like in some,
people still use the name for some of those cellars around there.
Yeah,
it's true.
I don't know if it's actually the right cellar.
No,
but
it's a different cellar, but it's the nearby.
Wrong cellar.
It's nearby.
At least you're at the same longitude and latitude.
Yeah,
you're at the
a
same
couple
level.
Blocks. Yeah, you
under
know.
The road. You know,
yeah, same
that's
elevation.
Hilarious.
Yeah,
it's too funny. But in a lot of those original bars. You know, at least if you go by, you know, some of, you know, novels and other nonfiction books, you know, people are eating oysters and,
There were a lot of oyster saloons.
Oyster saloons where, I mean, New York was famous due to all these oyster beds before overfished.
There was Sandy Welch's Oyster Saloon on Lower Broadway, which was hugely popular, famous in New York from around 1830 up into the 1850s until Sandy Welch took the pledge and became a prohibitionist or a temperance person. But it was famous for its Tom and Jerry and its punch as much as for its oysters at Sandy Welch's. So, you know, you would those things tended to go together.
And I think people forget that, I mean, New York really was a maritime city. I mean, we were...
Oh, so much more than now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were all about shipping. We were all about ships. I mean, this was like a major port.
On New York Harbor today, if you like, take the Staten Island Ferry, which is free and is a beautiful ride. You go out on the harbor and you'll see maybe four or five other boats, maybe 10, you know, during your 20-minute ride. And... if you went in 1880 or even, you know, 1800, there would have been 200 or 300 boats.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been just packed.
Oh,
there would have been boats everywhere.
Yeah.
Ships coming in. Even, you know, in the first part of the 20th century, there might be like a massive Navy battleships going up to the Brooklyn Navy Yard, going under the Brooklyn Bridge. That's why the Brooklyn Bridge is so tall, you wanted ships to be able to go under it. And so that's why they had to build them so high off the water.
Oh, yeah.
You know, wherever there's ships, there's waterfront.
Oh, for sure.
And whenever there's waterfront, there's bars.
Exactly. All these sailors going all around the world, drinking different things in different ports. Sailors are always thirsty. They're going around. They're trying things. They're bringing stuff back.
There's the Ear Inn right on the far west side of Tribeca.
Yeah.
Is not always been a bar, but it has been a bar in the past and is a bar now. And that's, you know, right on the waterfront. And that's still got a serious waterfront vibe, even though that neighborhood is so gentrified.
It is.
And some of the people in there are like fashion models. But there are also some pretty rough and tumble types in there still.
And the neon sign and the way that it looks, it's like right off of like a
the
pulp.
Way
it's like a pulp novel cover, you know, like a film noir, you know, you expect to be in some kind of Stanley Kubrick, you know, Killer's Kiss or something.
It's still got some of that, a little bit of that. You know, there's Montero's in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
Down by the waterfront is a pretty legit sailor's dive. That last time I was in there, there were a couple, it was during Fleet Week, and there were a couple of sailors in white.
And they looked very...
It was amazing. I was like, wow, you guys are like straight out of Central Casting, you know? It's like...
This looks very authentic.
Yeah, they went to the sailor's bar.
And that was... Is that part of the last bit of, like, Red Hook's, like, Portuguese, like, history or not really?
No, I think it's on Atlantic Avenue, so it's not quite in Red Hook.
Yeah.
But it's definitely part of the waterfront of the Brooklyn, and there was a lot of Spanish and Portuguese.
Oh, yeah.
The Long Island Bar, which is now one of the famous cocktail bars in New York, was originally a Spanish diner.
Yeah.
Hispanic, and they were, I think, from Spain.
Oh yeah, two sisters maybe.
Yeah, and their husband, the husband of one of them.
And Sonny's obviously. And that's
down in Red Hook. Yeah. That's an old waterfront dive.
Yeah.
That became an art bar just because Sonny, who came from waterfront dive people, actually liked art. And it was his bar, goddammit.
Yeah.
He didn't do what he wanted with it. And he and his family owned the building. So who cares?
Well, that sort of saves another bar, too. One of our favorite bars in the world is McSorley's.
Yeah.
You know, I guess now the East Village, I mean, until somebody comes up with a new...
Yeah, I mean, it's across from fancy new buildings.
I was going to say, I'm not sure if it really counts when there's like a Rem Cool House building, you know, around the corner, and, you know, there's this and that star architect, you know.
It's no longer a working class neighborhood.
No. It's the type of thing where, like, if you fell asleep for a long nap inside McSorley's and you reemerged, you'd have no idea where the hell you were.
Yeah.
Because
everything would be different.
Exactly.
All the buildings are different. All the businesses are different.
Right, exactly.
All the people are different.
It's the only last thing, and part of it is they own the building.
Yeah.
And
they've been, you know, they've been there in the same, not quite the same family. They had a couple shifts of ownership, but they were, like, within their social circle and carefully chosen. Since 1854 is the year that's given, and it's not far off from that.
And what's funny is that I think it's both the bar and also the old ice chest came off of a schooner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the original owner, to save money, bought fixtures kind of like, you know, people do now, like auction. But again, talking about New York's maritime roots, it's literally they bought it off of an old ship, like, to save money.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they came on a ship. They bought it. They bought it. You know, everything went through the harbor.
Oh, yeah.
And people had a strong orientation to it.
Oh, yeah. There aren't that many places where you can say somebody like Lincoln and Houdini and God knows whoever else came through McSorley's.
And drank beer.
And drank beer.
Because that's all you could drink there.
By
it was
the
a beer house.
Right.
And it's still a beer house.
Those tiny mugs of beer.
Yeah. Oh, they were bigger back then.
Right. But a fist of dark or a fist of light. That's only two varieties. I don't know how they carry so many of those pint glasses. You know, they'll carry I'm
like
certainly not in my
at
hands,
a time.
But yeah,
no.
The
place is as close to unchanged as a place can get. I mean, I've been drinking there since the late 70s, and that's a long time ago now.
Yeah.
I've been drinking there for 40 years, more than 40 years, and I'm not that old. I'm 58.
So. I was going to say you're probably one of the younger people at certain times.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it has changed very little during that time.
There's now, I think, a TV that they roll out on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah.
Although nobody ever goes. I always want to go.
Yeah.
I think maybe this year.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You and I have to go because it's the one time a year where there's literally nobody in McSorley's. There's such a rarity.
I know. It's amazing.
They close early because nobody ever shows up for Super Bowl Sunday. They will go.
No, why would they go there?
You and I will go. We'll have beer.
Yeah, we'll have beer. We'll eat cheese and crackers.
Some saltines, a sleeve of saltines.
This is the remains of the free lunch.
Exactly.
You have to pay for it, but not much.
Grilled cheese, I think they'll make if they're in a good mood. If not, they'll make a cheeseburger or like a liverwurst sandwich, which I've never been brave enough to eat, but
I've seen people eat it.
I've seen it. I've seen it.
I've had friends of mine order it. I get the chili, which is also takes a little bit of bravery, but is pretty good.
Yeah, there was a guy named Rafe Bartholomew wrote a book. His father has been working there for I think since the 60s, and you know, after I read some of the memories about their kitchen, made me more inclined to eat before I got there. I just stick probably with the crackers and cheese.
I don't know.
From now on.
I've been eating there since forever.
I guess
enough, and it hasn't killed me.
Yes.
I don't think I've even gotten sick from it.
No. Enough beer will be fine.
Yeah, enough beer. Exactly.
Well,
go ahead.
The funny thing there is that, like, that old ice chest, like, literally they used, like, they still use it, but they used to use it for food. And then the health department was like, it's not exactly, it doesn't keep a consistent temperature for the big cheese.
Of course it doesn't.
It's like 150 years old, this thing. But now they use it to keep, like, you know, the soda and all the canned goods.
Yeah, because they don't.
But it's kind of amazing. I mean, it's like, you know.
They don't serve bottled beer there.
No.
They served bottled Guinness for a while as an experiment, I remember.
How'd that go?
People ordered it occasionally.
Yeah.
And they just said to hell with it.
Yeah.
It kind of makes me think of the different kinds of bars you have in New York. Back in the 1860s, 1870s, the Brooklyn Eagle did a kind of a list of the different types of bars.
And that was a pretty big paper.
Yeah, it was a big paper.
Was,
I mean,
Brooklyn was its own city.
Yeah, it was its own city, and that was its number one paper.
Yeah.
And it talks about there was the Shades, and the McSorley's is the Shades.
Okay.
It's a place where you do your drinking at tables, mostly.
I've never heard this term
and,
before,
and you
but
drink
I love
mostly
it.
Beer. Yeah. It's an English thing.
Okay.
And it was named after a bar in London, the Shades. Huh. And everybody
still
was
open,
a copy.
But yeah.
You know, everybody was kind of copying on that.
Right.
And so you'd have, and there was the famous Shades on Thames Street in New York, behind Liberty Church and, you know, down there.
Sure.
Down in Lower Manhattan. And that had been open since the 1830s. And McSorley's comes, you know, 25 years later. And it's pretty much a Shades, and it's still a Shades. And that was, you know, the Shades, you might be able to get, like, some roast beef or, you know, a little bit of simple English-style food and drink beer at a table.
Right.
They might have occasionally spirits. Then there was the hotel bar, you know, fanciest of the fancy. Everything, you know, like top grade.
Like the Hoffman House or...
Yeah,
or...
the Hoffman House, the Astor House, which was down across from City Hall.
And the Hoffman House was around Madison Square Park.
Yeah, it was on Madison Square Park.
Which was pretty... Yeah. And Madison Square Garden was originally there, too.
Yeah, it was there, too, exactly. Yeah, hence the name. You'd have the French-style cafes where you'd sit at tables and drink wine. Mostly champagne was the wine that people mostly drink.
Doesn't sound bad to me.
And you might have, you know, little glasses of brandy and things like that. And that would be waiter service. You'd also have coffee and things like that. And they had those in New York. And then you had what they called was the American bar, which was a stand-up bar, no bar stools, and that's where you drank cocktails. Right. You never lingered at those places. The American bar, you'd go in. You'd have a round of drinks, maybe three rounds of drinks, two or three. You know, whoever you were with, you'd buy a round, and then out you go. You'd drink those standing up.
Kind of like the Italian espresso bar, like in Italy, where you go in.
Exactly.
Have an espresso, bang it down, leave.
Yeah, and you'd go out, and these things were open all day.
Right.
And you'd go in and have your cocktail at 8 in the morning and then go to work.
Sure.
Which is, you know, I'd work in an office if I could do that, too. It was before you had to talk on telephones to people who weren't right there in front of you. It was before you had to operate any kind of office machinery.
Right.
It was before streetcars were mechanized. And
it was a different world.
It was a different world.
Where do you think, like, the Delmonico's of, like, that world fit in? Like, was that sort of
That was kind of like the hotel bars.
Yeah,
very fancy, you know, best of everything.
Yeah.
And those places you might... They had tables along with the with the stand up bar.
Yeah.
But if you drank at the bar there, you would stand.
Yeah.
Nobody had bar stools.
Huh.
The only you know who had bar stools was oyster bars, because you were eating.
Okay.
And bar stools and soda fountains.
Yeah.
Because it was for ladies and kids also. Ladies weren't supposed to be strong enough to be able to stand at a bar. They had delicate constitutions was the theory.
Oy.
People have always been extremely stupid. but anyway.
We associate things like oyster houses with New Orleans and, you know, other cities.
Oh, New York had so many. And we were pulling them right out of the harbor.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a little terrifying.
Well, now.
Now. Yeah. Well, even then. I mean, where did all the sewers drain? In bars like that, you would have stools. And after Prohibition, it was all bar stools.
Yeah.
Because I think everybody went over to Europe and saw the Europeans always had stools at their bars.
And we forgot everything.
Yeah, we forgot everything. We learned it all from Europe.
Exactly.
And the Europeans, it was all the game of telephone.
Yeah.
You know, the Europeans learned it from us, and then we learned it from them. And so we kind of did everything a little bit differently after Prohibition.
And I imagine the speakeasies were kind of like a hodgepodge of both. Like some of like the fancier ones.
You're exactly right.
Were kind of club-like and, you know, had tables and looked like restaurants or bars or private clubs, and the down and dirty ones were you didn't want to linger. I mean, it was
that was the other kind of bar that we haven't really talked about is dive bars, of which New York always had very many.
Oh yeah,
New York City was not the inventor, as far as I can tell, of the word of the term dive. I think that goes to Buffalo.
And we have a whole previous episode all about the dive bar.
All about the dive bar. But New York had lots of dive bars.
Oh, yeah.
And there were places, waterfront ones like Jimmy the Priest's, that was one of the models for Eugene O'Neill.
Iceman Cometh.
And the Iceman Cometh. And that was a pretty rotten bar. and it finally closed in around 1918 because they killed four of their residents with methanol poisoning by buying bootleg liquor that was not correct. And it wasn't bootleg because it was illegal.
No.
It was just they were getting it because it was extra cheap.
Oh.
Yeah, and four of their guys died. There were a lot of places like that, these just rough waterfront joints. And, you know, not all of them were as unscrupulous as that one.
Yeah.
A lot of them were just, you know, they were just low to the ground. I mean, they were places for people who didn't have a lot of money to drink.
Yeah, or sailors coming in and out, you know.
But one of the drinks, which sounds awful today because it was awful, this stuff called mild ale, which was not mild ale. It was stale beer mixed with what they called a mulligan. And the mulligan was something you kept in a bottle behind the bar, and it was there to disguise the taste of the stale beer.
Yeah.
I tried making some once. I followed a recipe, and I pried a couple nails from the floorboards of my house. My house is old enough to have iron nails.
Right.
Because you'd put a couple iron nails, a splint of pine wood, some gin.
You got this recipe from Harry Potter?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's from the Potions Master. Yeah. And then you'd fill it up with stale beer. Oh, and hot sauce.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about this, you know, before in an earlier episode about sort of the great American whiskey myth, this idea that like what people were drinking,
drinking
100 years ago was amazing. And the same thing, I think, is with cocktails, too, where, you know, in these proto New York bars, you know, it's been so fetishized and mythologized that people think that it's this were these amazing bastions of cocktails.
And in the dives, they were drinking stale beer with iron and pine.
Yeah,
in it.
For whiskey or passed.
Yeah, exactly. Because they were poor.
Yeah.
And that's what you could get, you know, and it was, I mean, there's no disguising it. New York has always been a pretty rough, insensitive town.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the rich people in New York, you could get the best of everything.
Right.
The poor people,
You know, I've read certain accounts of like bars in like the Five Points section, which is, you know, was the poorest.
Yeah,
and
rough.
Rough, but like, you know, are we romanticizing them? You know, sound fun with dancing and music, you know, but they're also pickpockets and, you know, murderers.
I mean, if you couldn't pay your tab, you'd be thrown out naked on the street.
Right. Well, I mean,
you know.
Something.
Then what?
Right.
And if it's winter?
So what?
So what?
Right, exactly.
You didn't pay. You know, we took your clothes.
Right.
Because you owed us money. You shouldn't have had those extra four cocktails.
Right. But it's interesting that it, you know, somehow over the next 200 years, give or take, turns this, all of these different types of bars and bartenders and drinks somehow turn into this idea of like a New York bar, you know, and this Irish bartender and, you know, kind of like a more gritty Cheers almost, you know, where.
Yeah, so they're supposed to be gruff and warm, warm-hearted.
Right.
And, you know, they weren't always that warm-hearted back in the day. There was a lot of fighting in bars, too, which even more than now.
Oh, for sure.
There was a lot of fighting.
Fighting and gambling and vice.
Yeah, gambling, and prostitution everywhere.
I mean, all types of crazy
stuff
is happening in bars. I think it's funny how we've you know, this idea of a New York bar has evolved and sanitized in many ways to, you know,
that's
with
true.
Coke from Cheers, you know, the sort of kind-hearted,
yeah,
older.
Yeah, gruff, but with a heart of gold.
And a towel, a bar towel yeah. over his shoulder, you know, yeah. ready to help you, you know, if you really need it. But until that moment, he's not going to step in.
He's not going to throw you out naked on the street in January.
No, he'll take you in. He'll take you and feed you. Yeah, he's going to pack your wounds and feed you soup, you know.
He's going to take your shoes.
Give you, you know, tough advice you know, that you don't want to hear.
No, they didn't do that.
Yeah, I don't know if that ever existed.
No, but, not really. Maybe if you were a millionaire, they knew that you were good for
the Delmonico's.
Yeah, Delmonico's or the Fifth Avenue Hotel where the bartender knew you, but only if the bartender knew you.
Exactly.
Because there's plenty of accounts of people getting kicked out of those places, too. and they weren't, you know.
Out of the back door, but still.
Yeah, but bounced.
Bounced out of the back door,
yeah,
not out of the front door.
Oh, New York.
Well, I can't wait to see what comes next. There's always something next.
I know. There's always something next.
Hopefully we'll be, you know, in 100 years, people will be talking about, you know, places like PDT and Death & Co. as being centuries old. Hopefully some of the bars that we know and
love. Some of these bars are going to survive.
Some of them will hold on, hopefully, for decades, if not
Some of them will eventually longer. Buy their buildings.
Exactly.
And then they'll...
Through some kind of miracle,
and they'll pass them on to their kids, and they'll continue. I mean, statistically, some of them have to.
Somebody has to.
Somebody has to.
One of them has
I don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to be awesome.
Well, if anybody's listening to this 100 years from now, hopefully some of these
Let us know.
Let us know. Go to the bar. Have a drink for us. Toast to old New York.
Tell Francine Cicchini that her great-grandfather ran a good bar.
Absolutely. Cheers. Dave and I encourage you to drink responsibly, always.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.